Great Scott!
Are you a sports fan who loves to have a good laugh?
Oh, yeah!
Then you're in the right place.
I'm going to make him an offer again.
Life moves pretty fast.
The Patriots win the
Welcome
Super Bowl!
Welcome to the Man Cave Chronicles.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Man Cave Chronicles. This week I have Colin Mockery on. Colin, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, good. What's going on with you for 2018?
Just a lot of touring and doing shows wherever somebody wants me.
I know everybody, the listeners know you from Whose Line Is It Anyways, and we'll talk about that, and you've done a couple other projects as well. Let's start off with where are you originally from?
I was born in Scotland, in a place called Kilmarnock. Then in 1964, my family immigrated to Canada, ending up in Montreal, and then after 10 years, ending up in Vancouver.
What made him decide to move to Canada?
My dad was a very rare Scot in that he didn't like Scotland. Usually, Scottish people are just rabid about their heritage. And he always felt, he had some friends in Canada. He felt that Canada offered more opportunity to his family. So he moved over there, brought us with him. And I think it was probably a really good choice.
How old were you when you moved to Canada?
I was six.
You were six. Do you remember anything about Scotland?
Yes, I've been, gone back quite a bit. I still have family there. So I love it. It's a great country. I love the fact you can, just the stories you hear from people in pubs. It's just, I always make sure I get back there once a year.
Yeah, that's great. So how was it growing up in Canada?
It was quiet, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm sure it wasn't much different. We watched movies, and it seemed those days where your childhood seems like a Steven Spielberg movie, just from like running through apple orchards and building tree forts. So it was that kind of thing. I was a very quiet kid. I had a small circle of friends. I was sort of a bookworm. And then it really wasn't until high school that I sort of came out of my shell.
Yeah. Were you pushed into sports at all, like hockey, since you lived in Canada, or were you more of like soccer because of Scotland?
I loved hockey, but I just could not get the skating thing, which is apparently very important if you're playing hockey. So my father coached a soccer team, so I joined that, which is always interesting, being coached by your dad.
Yeah. How was that? Did he yell at you?
It was all right. Because I didn't have any natural talent, I was the goalie. So, I remember this one weird game. My father was coaching. I was in goal, and we were tied. And then the other team caught a breakaway, and the breakaway was my brother. It was just sort of a weird a family dynamic there. And then I managed to, I made the save and won the game.
So what made you decide to, like, how did you get into like comedy and stuff like that? Were you like a class clown in school? Then from there you decided that's what you wanted to pursue?
No, very quiet. I mean, I loved watching old movies, old comedies, some of the great sitcoms of the States in the 60s and 70s. But it was, my plan was to become a marine biologist. And then I was dared by a friend to try out for a school play, and I got my first laugh. And that was pretty much the end of anything else. I remember that moment so vividly, and I thought, yes, I want this more and more. So I sort of dropped sciences and went into theater.
Okay. And what were like some of your favorite shows that you mentioned?
Do you mean like Whose Line?
No, when you said that you enjoyed some of the TV
shows. Oh, the TV shows.
Yes.
I was a big Dick Van Dyke fan, the Andy Griffith, then when Monty Python came along, I thought that was great, SCTV. So, I mean, there's been a rich history of comedy throughout the time I was born. So anything that made me laugh, I really gravitated towards.
Yeah. So then you ended up going to college for theater, and that what made you pursue more into comedy?
Yeah, I found my acting teacher actually at the end of the semester said, you know what, you're really good at low comedy. So I thought, oh, okay, well, this could be something to base a career on. So yeah, went through the usual theater school thing and just started looking for work.
Yeah, and then from there you just started like, started joining different improvs?
I saw a demonstration of this thing called theater sports, which had been invented by this English professor living in Calgary. And it was sort of a mixture of sports and improv. There were two teams. There was a referee who issued challenges, and there were judges who would judge each scene. And it became this sort of big hit in Calgary. And then we learned about it. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, this is something I'd like to do. And within a year, we were like one of the biggest things in Vancouver. It was great.
Yeah. So how did you, from there, you continued on with your career and everything. And I read online that, is that where you met Ryan Stiles?
I met him, yes, in Vancouver during theater sports. He was doing stand-up at the time. And a mutual friend sort of introduced us, and we started improvising together.
Yeah. So how did you end up on Whose Line Is It Anyways?
I was at Second City. And it was still the British Whose Line at that point.
Okay.
And it was still a fairly new art form in Britain. So the producers decided to bring some North Americans over. They were doing a cross-continent tour. And they saw the show I was in at Second City. So they asked all of us to audition the next morning. And we did that thing that you do as improvisers. Everybody was supporting each other, so no one stood out. So none of us got cast. And then the next year, I moved down to L.A. with my wife, Deb, who was starring and writing a pilot that she did down there. They came through again. I didn't know anybody I was auditioning with, so I was like, hey, screw you. Look at me. Hmm. And from that, I got it.
No, I want to get back to that. I had a couple more things I wanted to ask you before Whose Line It Is Anyways. Do you remember the first time you performed?
I remember that school play. I remember, so clearly that walking to the center of the stage and getting a laugh and just thinking it was the best thing ever.
Do you ever remember like going on stage and being heckled?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's really something to get heckled. I wouldn't say it's fun, but it certainly gets all your nerve endings alive. And we don't really get heckled that much in improv because a lot of our show is based on the audience shouting things at us.
Yeah.
But we tend to try to control it more. But yeah, when I can't remember a specific heckle, but every once in a while you get one and you just you go, oh, I don't know how comedians can do this.
Yeah. Well, how do you... what do you tell somebody that's in the same business, you know, like how to handle heckling?
What you have to take control of the situation, either, getting back some sharply timed zinger or just ignore and move on.
Yeah.
It really, we find that most, we've had, I think, three hecklers in like 15 years, and there were just all drunk people who started to wander towards the stage, which was bizarre. So we ended up actually taking their suggestion and sort of making fun of them with the improv. So that sort of diffused the situation.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite moments on the show?
Whose Line?
Yes.
The weird thing with improv is... once you do a scene, it's gone from your mind. So I don't, there's only like three things I remember clearly from Whose Line. And the rest of it, there have been times where I've been flipping through the channels and I'll see a Whose Line and stop and not remember anything about a scene I'm clearly in. but the Richard Simmons scene, I think will forever be sort of associated with Whose Line. getting a chance to work with Robin Williams and also working with Sid Caesar. Those were sort of three big moments for me.
Yeah. Do you do any like pre-performance rituals that makes you feel comfortable if you're going on stage? Like, how do you prepare yourself before you go on there?
We don't. It used to be when Brad and I were first starting out, we'd play cards all the time. And now it's gotten to that part where we're on our iPhones or iPads reading, or it's just getting into sort of a relaxed mode. And then trying to make your mind as blank as possible when you go out there. So you're just accepting everything your partner gives you.
Yeah. And I had Brad on a few months ago, and you know, I know you guys are touring and everything. How is it working with him?
He's okay.
He's okay?
No. He's Brad and I have known each other for almost 30 years now, and it's really great when you can, you know, improvise with someone that you've known that long, because there's sort of a shorthand and there's a trust that is really great. And he, we're opposites in many ways. I mean, very similar in a lot, but he's very anal. He's very detail-oriented, where I never notice these things, but he does. And because of that, those things got taken care of. So it really works out to my benefit.
Yeah.
And then my job in the tour is just to make sure he doesn't have a heart attack.
Why is that?
Because he gets so, he can get so uptight about things. It's like, why isn't this there? What's wrong with this light? Or it's like, you know what? It all works out.
Yeah. Especially like an improv where you're trying to go with the flow with everything.
Exactly.
How is it working with audience members? Like when you pull them on stage?
I just say we've been pretty lucky. I mean, we usually bring up couples so that people don't feel alone on stage, and they're with someone they know, so they feel a little bit safer. Also, we never take anyone who's waving their hands and jumping up and down, because you feel like, okay, they want this to be their moment, and we're just trying to get a show going on. But I would say most of the time, the people have been great, and just it always amazes me that we can get people to come up and do the weird things that we ask them to do, and they do it quite happily.
Yeah. Have you ever had a, like, you know, when you pull them up on stage and it doesn't go the way you want it to go, and you guys have to edit the episode out?
The beauty with Whose Line is there wasn't really anything edited out. A lot of stuff would go wrong during taping, and they would just keep it in. Either bleeping it or, you know, like Ryan smashing his head on the neon tubing in front of Drew's desk. Wayne picking up Melissa's underwear during a scene. So all these things were definite bloopers, but they just kept them in the show.
Yeah.
It becomes sort of a, you know, a win-win situation for us. We've had some audience members who have, like during the sound effects, just give the worst sound effects, but it actually gives us a lot more to play with.
Correct. Yeah. What's like the big difference between the British version and the American version?
The main difference was the censorship. I mean, it was the same producers. It was mostly the same cast, a lot of the same crew. So the atmosphere around the set was very familiar. It was something we'd gone through for years. The only difference was in Britain, you could pretty much do anything.
Yeah.
And there was no censorship. I think the F-bomb was dropped a couple of times on Whose Line. A lot of very frank sexual talk, but it was fine. Coming to America, the very first season, there was a scene where I was in love with Greg Proops. So at the end of the scene, I kissed him. And then this voice came over the intercom and said, can you make something else up? You can't do that. And which was weird, because in the previous scene, I had killed three women and thrown them out a window. But that seemed fine. Kissing Greg was dangerous. And that would drive Drew into a frenzy, because he has this thing about censorship. So, you know, the next 10 minutes would be him introducing games with words you can't see on television. And then it was finally decided, you know what, you guys tape the show, and then afterwards the censor and the producer would fight out whether we could keep things or not. One of the funniest things I ever heard my producer say was after a meeting with the censor, he came up and said, Colin, we lost the pussy, but we got two penises. So that was weird. We never knew where the line was. There were some things that I thought, well, that'll never get on the show, and did. Yeah. And then some things that were fairly innocent that sort of got bleeped and actually made the audience think of something worse.
How many years were you in Britain for the show?
We would just go over for 6 weeks in the summer.
Okay.
And they would shoot on the weekends. The greatest thing about Whose Line has always been the shooting schedule. It's never heavy. I mean, the American series, we do two weekends, and that can get a season of shows. This year, we're not even filming because we had so many from last year. We're going to make all the extra from last year of this season.
Yeah. And it's still going to be on CW?
Yep. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite game on the show?
I would say probably Greatest Hits. What I love about it is Ryan and I get to riff for a little while and sort of improvise without any kind of gimmick, and then we throw over to the guys who sing, who are amazing at it.
Yeah.
So it's like the rare scene where I have fun both as a participant and a spectator. Yeah.
The Man Cave Chronicles on Twitter at the MCC Podcast. We'll be right back.
RotoWear.com.
RotoWear.
Big shout out to the RotoWear company.
It's so goddamn comfortable.
Can't recommend them enough, man. Yeah. High quality t-shirts.
Shout out to RotoWear.com.
You see me rocking the shirts on the videos and stuff like that.
Where'd you get that?
RotoWear.
That is courtesy of RotoWear.
It's just the highest quality of shirt.
Yeah, I really like the baseball designs you got here.
The shirt is beautiful.
Everybody who I've talked to who has the shirt basically says they can't believe how good the quality is.
Yeah, Ken, I've seen you. I've been getting a lot of love. You said you've been only running for a little over a month.
CBS guys are tweeting out shirts. I'm seeing fantasy personalities everywhere digging this guy's shirt.
I love the Run DFS shirt.
It comes with baseball cards with all the different shirts on it.
RotoWear on Twitter. Check out RotoWear.com.
Oh my God. Is this shirt making love to me right now? Like, what's going on? I love this shirt.
Yo, monkeys, it's me, DDP, Diamond Dallas Page, the king of Bada Bing, the master of the diamond cutter, the three-time world champion, WWE Hall of Famer, and CEO and founder of DDP Yoga. And you, monkey, well, you're listening to my main man, the man with a plan, Elias, on Man Cave Chronicles. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Bang!
And usually the singers are Wayne Brady and Brad.
Yeah. Chip Heston has also done it, and Jeff Davis. And they're all... I always feel they never really get enough credit for what they do. People are always thinking that they know beforehand what the song is, or that they're cheating somehow, but they're just amazingly good at what they do.
Yeah. Do you think that's one of the hardest things to do in improv?
Oh, God, yes. Well, I mean, I say that because I have no musical talent whatsoever, so it's always, it's the only thing in improv that strikes fear in my heart, knowing that some song is coming up, because part of it is I really want to sound good, and it's just not going to happen.
But you did okay during the hold down part.
I guess. I mean, I can't even tell you how much we all despise the hoedown. People sort of laugh at it, but they really don't realize the amount of hate we had for that game.
Why was that?
It's, by the time we finished the American version, we must have done over, 700 hoedowns. I think that was part of the reason. And they were just always hard. If you were the first person who sang, you had so little time to come up with a verse. You're probably best if you were second position because you had time to think. And then the third and fourth position, you're just hoping the people in front of you didn't take your verse. And sometimes you didn't know until the very last rhyme that they did, and you go, oh, crap, I have to come up with something. It was just always terrifying.
Do you have a, for what game do you find the most challenging on the show? Would it be the singing, or was there any other games?
I would say mostly the hoedown. I'm trying to think. No, what I loved about the other games was, just depending on the other players. When you have to do the musical games, that really depends on the talent that you have. Whereas with the other games, you're giving and going with your partner on stage.
How was it working with Drew Carey when it first got brought back to the U.S.?
It was great. He is one of the sweetest men you'll ever meet. He's incredibly generous. He would take us on trips every year. Just a really sweet man. And that was one of the best things for me, Whose Line, going to the States, was getting a chance to become friends with Drew.
Now, you did a few cameos on his TV show too, right?
Yeah.
How was that? But that was like one of my favorite shows, and to this day I'm like mad that they never released it on DVD or anything.
I know. I don't know what their problem is. Yeah. What I loved about the shows that we were on were they were live shows. So we had to do three different runs of the show for each time zone. And it was just exciting to know that there were no retakes. You had to just keep going, and there could be no mistakes. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I actually remember that. Was that the one you actually had to wear the 3D glasses for one of them?
I think so, yes. Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah. How is it working with Aisha now?
Great. I was, not worried, because I know she's accomplished and all she's done. But I thought, with the previous hosts of Whose Line, they've all been really easy to make fun of. At that point, Drew had the weight problem. And so there was always stuff. And I thought, with Aisha, we've got this beautiful woman who's really smart, very accomplished, is as big a nerd as a nerd is. What can we make fun of? But we found a way.
Yeah. And she can take it, too.
Yeah, she can take it and she can give it out.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's the best thing. It's nice to have that sort of brother-sister relationship.
Yeah. I forgot. How was the working on the Improvaganza, also on the Game Show Network that Drew brought there?
Yeah, that was, that was fun because of the cast and it was all friends. It was sort of weird, being in Vegas with an incredibly drunk audience doing improv. It's tough doing it with sober people, but it was, it certainly was an experience.
So how did you and Brad decide to start touring?
Every Super Bowl weekend, Drew would take us out to Vegas, and we would do shows at the at Caesars or MGM. And it was the cast of Whose Line and some friends of ours. And it was always a great time, but because there was like 10 of us, you didn't really get a chance to be on stage a lot. And Brad came up and said, I've been thinking about maybe doing a two-man improv thing, seeing how that works. You want to try it? So we kind of went out for a week, and it went really well. And 16 years later, we're still doing it.
How many dates do you guys do throughout the year?
It depends on the year, anywhere from 50 to 100.
Yeah. Do you guys try to usually do like the same areas every year, or do you try to spread it out?
We try to spread it out. I think we've hit every state except three. We've done Canada, Australia, Britain, and India. So. Yeah, it's been really good to us.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite place to visit when you're touring?
We love Milwaukee. We have done the most shows in Milwaukee, more than any other city we've been to anywhere. And the crowds have always been great and treat us really well. And it's always fun to go there.
Yeah. And, Milwaukee has the beer, too.
It has the beer, and there's a statue of Fonzie. It has right. Everything you could want.
Why are Canadians so funny?
I have no idea. I think we were fortunate in that when I was growing up, we had a strong influence of both British and American classic comedies, and we understood both types of comedy. We also had, I think, sort of that little brother to the States feeling, a little bit of an outsider. So we sort of honed our comedy as an awkward outsider. And I think I think people enjoy that, so I guess that's why. And also, it's cold up here, and we have to do something.
Right. Well, it's cold here. I'm in Massachusetts, and it's freezing tonight.
Oh. Do you guys have that big storm?
Last time I checked, we haven't had a flake out there.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's supposed... I think we're only supposed to get a few inches here, but I think other areas are supposed to be like 6 to 12.
I hate cold.
Yeah, I'm ready for spring.
Okay. I'll do what I can do. I know people.
There you go. What's the best advice your mom ever gave you and why?
Oh, dear.
These are some
That is such a great question.
These are some Twitter questions I got from fans.
My mother always said, have something to fall back on. When I was going to theater school or even when I started out acting, she would send me matchbooks that on the back would say, want to be a lawyer? Call 888. So, and I totally disregarded that advice. I had nothing to fall back on. So I guess it kind of worked out.
Yeah. What's one question you wish interviewers or podcasters would always ask you that you don't get asked?
Oh, I have to say, these are very good questions. Who do you think was the worst comic book character?
Wow. That's actually a good question. What's your answer?
Well, for me, there was a character on Batman in the 50s, I think, called Batmite.
Okay.
Who was an elf from another dimension who would dress up as Batman, and though he would try to help, he would get them into silly misadventures. It was just a horrible character.
Yeah. And
really shouldn't have been with Batman.
How long did he last in the comics? Do you remember?
He was there quite a... He had quite a few stories.
Yeah.
Look up, everybody, Google right now, Batmite, M-I-T-E.
I'm going to have to. I'm curious now. I wasn't really, I liked watching the movies and stuff like that, but I wasn't really a big comic person to read comics, except for the Sunday paper for those funny comics.
Right. How old are you?
I am 40.
Oh, interesting. I would have thought like 36 to 44 would be prime comic.
Yeah. I just never got into it. My brother did. I never got into it.
My brother never got into it either.
Yeah. What's one thing that would surprise people about you?
Oh, what would one thing? That I was an honor student and valedictorian in my high school?
Oh, you were about, that's great. And you said you wanted to go become a what after high school?
Marine biologist.
Marine biologist. So you think if the whole improv thing didn't work out, you would have went back to that?
No, I'd be so screwed. I can't even imagine what I'd be. I truly have no skills. The thing that has given me success in this business has been stamina, just hanging in till everyone else gave up or died. It's really worked out for me.
How was it winning two awards in the Canadian Comedy Awards?
It was great. It was a lovely honor, and I love that it's the funny people in Canada who are voting for you. And it's always nice to get recognized by your peers.
Yeah. Do you get recognized more in Canada or in the States?
I would say it's probably equal. I always love getting recognized in New York because they just shout at you.
Yeah.
They just go, "Hey, Colin," and just keep walking. And I always think, "Oh, that's cool."
Yeah. Do you and Brad do like a lot of like the meet and greets after the shows for fans?
Yeah. A lot of times the theaters request it, and we're absolutely fine with it. It's always nice to meet the people who are coming to your show and, helping you keep your career going.
Yeah. Have you ever had any weird interactions with any fans?
No, we've been pretty fortunate. I did have one woman in Edinburgh when I was at a pub lift up her sweater and press her breasts against the window. I guess that's odd, right?
Yeah, I would think so. That's a little bit odd. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to share with the listeners before we end this?
No, just thank you all for watching Who's Line and keeping that going so that I could help poor Brad Sherwood have a career.
Do you? How much longer do you see the show lasting?
The stage show or the TV show?
The TV show.
No idea. I mean, you know, the TV business is always weird. It could, you know, go on forever or it could stop tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we're just enjoying it as it happens.
Yeah. Actually, you guys do a tour also, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how long has that actual tour been going for Who's Line?
I guess about 3 years.
Yeah. And now, do you guys, is it always like the same cast or do you guys switch around with others, like former cast members also?
Yeah, it's mostly, there's sort of two. There's Brad and I, then there's one with Ryan Gregg, Jeff Davis, and Chip Esten used to do it, but I think Joel Murray is doing it now. Yeah. And I'm doing something with Ryan in Edmonton in July, so we sort of mix and match across the way.
Yeah. All right, how can the listeners find you?
They can check our website, colinandbradshow.com. That's all the information about whatever shows we have. There's also colinmockery.com. And I'm on Twitter at colinmockery.
All right. Thank you very much. And I hope you come back on the show. This was fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Man Cave Chronicles. Follow them on Twitter at the MCC Podcast. We'll catch you next time.